There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, big day of sport to look forward to right here on DubaiEye1038. We're talking all the way up to kickoff of the first of the quarterfinals this afternoon. England take on Sweden at 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE in the first of two games. And then, of course, Russia against Croatia. We'll have full build-up ahead of both of those games and team news before we get off air. Let's just get around the grounds, though, because it's not just the world of football that is being talked about at the moment, although that is, of course, the biggest story the world over. Rugby fans, though, they are being well catered for. They've got Super... How many weeks left of the Super Rugby CVR? A couple of weeks left?
Yeah, I think there's about 2 weeks of Super Rugby left before we're getting to the Tri Nations, Tom. And what I can tell you is that this morning we've had two games already. Sorry, three, I should say. The Chiefs beat the Brumbies 24 points to 19. The Hurricanes beat the Blues 42-24. The Blues have had an absolute dismal season. Waratahs beating the Sunwolves 77 points to 25. And two games coming this evening. The Bulls take on the Jaguars. They kick off at 5 past 5. And then the South African Derby, the Stormers take on the Sharks. They kick off at 7:15.
Thanks for that. What's happening in the world of the Tour de France? Well, I can tell you that they have 75 kilometres to go. Stage one is up and running. The surge from the front of the peloton to compete for the remaining intermediate sprint points has brought the gap to the breakaway right down. Jérôme Cousin, Kevin Ladonis and Johan Afredo now have a lead of just 154 as they swing through. 75 to go. So 75 to go, and Mark Cavendish expected to be up there or thereabouts as they come towards the conclusion of the stage of Fontenay-le-Comte. Let's get over to the world of cricket now. Mark Archer's got the latest for us.
Yeah, not too much live cricket today. There is one match of note taking, and it's a ladies match, ICC Women's Championship match taking place at Leeds. It's a one-day international between England and New Zealand. England are batting first after 31.5 of their 50 overs, 157 for 3. So that's going to be a fascinating series between those two toply ranked teams. There has been a lot of T20 cricket action the last couple of days, Tom. To bring you a wrap of that, here's our friends at ESPN.
Start with the result of the second T20I between England and India at Cardiff. And a gritty, unbeaten 58 by England batsman Alex Hales has helped the hosts level the series 1-1 by beating India at Cardiff by 5 wickets. On a slightly tricky track to bat on, England put India into bat and had the visitors on the back foot immediately after reducing them to 22 for 3 inside the first 5 overs. Virat Kohli and Suresh Raina then put on a 57-run stand for the 4th wicket to avoid a further collapse. Later, MS Dhoni's cameo of 32 helped the men in blue reach 148 for 5 from their 20 overs. In response, England were kept in check from the beginning, but crucial partnerships from Hales, first with Morgan and then with Bairstow, gave England the opportunity to win. When 12 runs were needed of the last over, Hales hit Bhuvaneshwar Kumar for 10 of his first 2 balls to put England in the driver's seat, and in the end, David Willey hit the winning runs with 2 balls to spare. The third and final T20I of the series will be played on the 8th of July at Bristol. Moving over to some news from the Indian camp, and Shardul Thakur is set to join India's squad. He will replace the injured Jasprit Bumrah for the upcoming 3-match ODI series against England. Bumrah had already been ruled out of the ongoing T20I series after injuring his left thumb during India's 76-run win in the first T20I against Ireland on the 27th of June at Malahide. On the 6th of July, the BCCI confirmed that the right-arm quick will miss the ODIs too after undergoing surgery in Leeds on the 4th of July before returning to India. Shardul has played 3 ODIs and 7 T20Is for India so far. Moving over to the result from the West Indies-Bangladesh test at North Sound, and a 5-4 by Shannon Gabriel, followed by 2 quick wickets from Miguel Cummins, helped the Windies dismiss Bangladesh for 144 in their second innings to win the first test at North Sound by an innings and 219 runs. Bangladesh had slipped to 62 for 6 by the end of day 2, and they lost Mehmudullah immediately on the beginning of the third day. Further, the visitors lost their 8 wickets for 88 runs as Gabriel completed his 5-4 by dismissing Kamrul Islam Rabbi. Nurul Hasan's fighting 64 delayed the Windies' victory as he formed a 55-run partnership with Rubel Hossain, but Cummins dismissed both of them in quick succession, handing the Windies the win in less than 7 sessions. Kemar Roach was declared man of the match for his devastating spell of 5-for-8 in the first innings. And lastly, another result from international cricket. In the last group stage encounter of the T20 Tri-Series, Australia beat host Zimbabwe by 5 wickets. In what was a dead rubber, Zimbabwe won the toss, and with their opener Solomon Mire's second half century of the series, reached 151 for 9 from their 20 overs. Andrew Tye was the pick of the bowlers for Australia as he picked up his fourth consecutive three-wicket haul in T20Is. In response, Australia lost a couple of early wickets, but Glenn Maxwell and Travis Head steadied their ship with a 103-run stand for the third wicket. Zimbabwe made Australia work for their victory till the last over, but eventually the visitors prevailed with one ball to spare. Australia will now face Pakistan in the final on the 8th of July.
So that's a quick roundup of some of the big cricket stories of the last couple of days. Let's pick up on a few of those points. I've been fascinated by this England against India T20 series. Obviously, building up for what promises to be a fascinating summer between these two teams. But straight from the off, that first game where India gave England something of an exhibition game, something of a schooling in T20 cricket. Mystery spin, Kuldeep, Chahal. I mean, they've just got this conveyor belt of extraordinary spinners.
Yeah, I flicked onto this match for like 5 minutes and I saw three wickets in an over. I think Alex Hales was going well. He got dismissed by Kuldeep, who bowls left arm leg spin, which is Chinaman. It's called nicknamed the Chinaman spin. I saw Alex Hales get 50 get out. Johnny Bairstow came and I think he was stumped first ball. Joe Root came and he was stumped second first ball that he faced, and they didn't know how to play this guy. He was landing him on a length and the guys, England players, were running down and they were missing it, and they were getting stumped or bamboozled totally, not knowing which way it was spinning, what was happening at all. And Kuldeep Singh came in there and did a wonderful job. And what's amazing about, particularly at T20 level, is these Indian players, because they're so exposed to, say, the IPL, that when they step up to international level, it's actually almost a step backwards for them. They're so well averse in the T20 format as opposed to, you know, some of the other players who don't play as much or may not play in the IPL like some of the England players. Some do, but a lot don't. So they play a lot more of the format, and they just seem to go well. But it's a fascinating series. England did win that second T20 international yesterday.
It's an interesting choice yesterday because obviously playing down at Cardiff. Funny, have you ever played at Cardiff? I don't know if you've ever played down there.
I've been down there, but I haven't played.
Extraordinary
down there.
Ground, isn't it? Because you've got these sort of really short boundaries, long, but the wide boundaries are very, very wide. The way the wicket's been set up this season, and so for a T20 game, I mean, who'd be a bowler down there? I suppose that's why England left Moeen Ali out, even though he'd been one of the pick players in the first of the T20s, and he's been good throughout the summer thus far for England. But bowlers, spin bowlers, slow bowlers on that track with the likes of Virat Kohli and Shikhar Dhawan smack you over your head, it's not going to take for good reading.
No, not much fun at all. But England, we know they're a really strong one-day international team. We know they've also got talent in the T20 game. And that's what sets up this test series at the end of it really interesting, because they've done well and not done so well in that format. But England have an interesting problem to deal with. They have Ben Stokes coming back to full fitness. Is where they fit him in. Alex Hales has been criticised recently about at the top order, but he's got some runs. So, where do they find way? But yesterday it was Owen Morgan, the captain, addressing how Ben Stokes is coming back to full fitness, how that's going to affect the England 11.
You've spoken a bit over the last few weeks about it's going to be a tricky decision to make when Ben comes back. It looks like we're finally at that stage. Are you clear about how that looks?
No, that's a simple answer. Ben comes into the squad for the next game. He's obviously a fantastic player, and there will be a difficult decision to make. We've made calls like this in the past, but we'll make it for hopefully the betterment of the team and put out our strongest 11.
Has Alex made it even more difficult tonight?
Alex always makes it difficult, particularly in T20 cricket. He's played a lot for us. He's one of our highest run scorers. He's a very experienced campaigner. And again, in innings like that tonight, makes him a pretty strong case for the next game.
Oh, and how have the white ball players dealt with, I suppose, the switching roles? You know, you've got Butler at the top of the order and then Hales doing what Butler normally does in ODIs. Have the players found that difficult, or is it something you've addressed them head on that they just need to get on with?
I think going on the understanding that we're 2 years out for a World Cup and we haven't quite devised our best top six yet, what the particular order is. We've been very flexible, or as flexible as we can, bar the opening partnership in the last three games. Like I've mentioned before, majority of our top six want to open the batting. But it's finding the best combination for the team in order to win the World Cup in 2020 or come close to compete. So we're still evolving that. Joss has obviously played well with Jason in the last two games. It's not going to happen all the time. So we're going to have to devise a plan, what's our best option in the middle order as well. And I don't think we've found it yet.
It's Hales. It's got to be Hales, isn't it, surely?
Well, I think on form and on history, you've got to give it go with Hales. But it's a good problem to have when you've got guys like Johnny Bairstow and Jason Roy, all in fine form. You know, it's a good problem for Owen Morgan and the English management to figure out.
That's what's been happening with England. Also, we saw Chris Jordan bowling. Actually, there's one little addendum I just want to add on to what I was watching with interest yesterday. Not often you see a run out of the sort that we saw yesterday with Shikhar Dhawan, who was run out because he dropped his bat. He'd made his ground.
Oh,
completely made his ground because he dropped his bat.
And his body or foot hadn't crossed the line yet.
Foot hadn't crossed the line. Bat was over the line. Full bat was over the line, but it wasn't in his hand.
It's almost as bad as being run out when the bowler gets it back to the non-bowler's end and you're out of your crease trying to back up too far. It's one of those ones, isn't it? But it's a shame. Shikhar Dhawan.
Interesting is also watching the first game between these two teams, England against India. And there was a great little Instagram thing that came out after the game of all the England boys staying late and in the change rooms watching the England penalty shootout against Colombia, and that was posted and with them all dancing around as well. I like that one.
Yeah, it's great. I guess with so much sport on at the moment, whether it be at Wimbledon, at the Grand Prix, with so many different nationalities taking part, they all want to catch a glimpse of their team. I even went far enough to say that Marin Cilic was eliminated from Wimbledon, the number 3 seed, so he could get on a plane and go to Russia and watch Croatia play in their semi-final tonight. But yeah, Chris Jordan and the England teams have been talking about how they really want to watch and support their football counterparts. This is what Chris Jordan had to say about this quarterfinal against Sweden.
Can I just ask you about the football? We saw your celebrations at Old Trafford for the penalty shootout win. Where will you be watching? Where will you be watching the quarterfinal?
Probably in Jess room again. It was a great atmosphere. Everyone was together. I mean, a bit bittersweet really, because obviously we lost the game not too long ago, but to see the guys out there in Russia move on to the next stage, it was a good feeling. And you saw how the guys celebrated. Everyone's well into it. The whole nation's well into it. So, yeah, let's keep it going. It's coming home.
It's coming home, is it?
It is coming home.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
Yeah, games are on, and they're on down here at Barasti as well. So if you want to watch the World Cup quarterfinals a little later on, England against Sweden, then Russia against Croatia, then please do make your way down to Barasti now. Big crowds already heading down here as we speak, so make your way down here. What's happening in the rugby, CVR?
Yeah, Tom, not too much. What I can tell you is what happened a little bit earlier on this morning. The Chiefs beat the Brumbies 24-19. The Hurricanes beat the Blues 42-24. The Waratahs beating the Sunwolves 77-25. The Bulls will take on the Jaguars. Their kickoff is at 5 o'clock UAE time. And the South African Derby, the Stormers take on the Sharks. They kick off at 7:15. In the NRL, The Canberra Raiders have just beaten the Canterbury Bulldogs 32 points to 28.
Yeah, let's let you know what's going on in the world of rugby league as well. Super League is upon us. They're coming towards the end of the season as well. Josh Wood's last minute drop goal gave Wigan victory over Warrington to extend their 100% home record in Super League this year. Adam Swift scored a hat-trick as Super League holder St Helens eased to a 36-6 victory over Bottom Side Widnes. And Huddersfield Giants kept their hopes of a place in the top eight finish alive with victory at home to Hull FC. Not much in the way of Super League for you today, just the one game to look forward to later on, that's Wakefield Trinity taking on Catalans Dragons. That one's off at 9:30 this evening. Let's get ourselves over to the world of AFL. Let's find out what's going on down under.
Yeah, a couple of results coming in today over the last couple of days, but a couple of live results coming in from the AFL. Round 16 taking place over there down under in Australia. Two results to hand that have just come in live off the press. Melbourne have taken on Fremantle and defeated them 102-48. Hawthorn Hawks have been too good for the Western Bulldogs. Big win for the Hawthorn Hawks, 122-59. Results earlier today, we've seen Port Adelaide have jumped into second place with a workmanlike victory over St Kilda at Adelaide Oval, 86 points to 50. Let's just listen to a quick highlight of the Port Adelaide captain, Travis Boak, kicking a key goal in that match.
In the Dixon territory, held his ground, three came at him, Robbie Gray somehow, but Travis Boak, the captain, and he delivers.
Less than a minute in, and it's already a goal on the board from a stoppage, so
Good work by Port. Bit of work on for the Saints.
Yeah, that was Port Adelaide having their victory over St Kilda, 86 points to 50. Also earlier today, we saw up in Brisbane at the Gabba, the Lions were far too strong for the bottom place Carlton Blues with a 65-point victory, 120 to 55. Let's have a quick listen to the Lions coach, Chris Fagan.
We'll get Chris Fagan for you in just a few moments' time. We'll get that one sorted. And, of course, listen in to what he had to say on proceedings. In the meantime, though, what else is going on in the world of AFL, NRL and more?
Yeah, AFL, the other big results coming in from Thursday, as we saw the top of the table, Richmond Tigers consolidated their position with a 47-point victory against Adelaide Crows, 103 to 56. And then on Thursday, massive match between two of the biggest teams in the competition. It was the fourth-placed Sydney Swans defeated by the sixth-placed Geelong Cats in a low-scoring match at the Sydney Cricket Ground, 71 to 59. We hope we get some audio here from the Swans coach, John Longmire, hoping to get John Longmire talking about that loss to Geelong on Thursday night.
Oh, I think there's a few things. I mean, 8.23 from Geelong probably aided that a bit too, so a fair bit. Certainly the first half, we were beaten out of the centre, smashed out of the centre, and then we had to try and get the ball moving our way, and then it's really a game of transition. It's, after that, they had 21 scoring shots, I think, to 5 on transition, which is a bit about the way we use the ball and the way we organise when we haven't got the ball. We'd rather didn't lose him. Kieran obviously did the medial early, and Hannah's hurt his calf pretty early, so we just had to play him forward. And Macca, he's got a broken collarbone, so lost a few tonight. It's both, our inside 50, we're not getting enough footy inside forward 50, and there's a couple of different reasons for that. I mean, when you're beating out of the centre like we were in the first half, you're not getting in your front half. It was one clearance, we won it, I think, in the centre bounces. And then it goes back to a bit about what I was talking about before, about the transition. But we're not getting a lot of repeats either, which can be on the back of clearances. Yeah, and that's a real positive. And he was pretty good last week too, so he's been... He got some form for two or three weeks in the reserves just before he got back in, and he's carried that through, which was good. It was Foxy did a couple of nice things, but Lee was good to have him back in a bit of form.
That was the Sydney Swans coach John Longmire talking about their defeat a couple of days ago to Geelong Cats, 71 points to 59 at the SGG. Sydney Swans stay fourth in the AFL. Early day though, big win for the Brisbane Lions. They beat the bottom place team Carlton Blues 120 to 55. This is what the Lions coach Chris Fagan had to say after the victory. He reckons his team are finally growing up.
That's the thing I'm noticing with our group a bit. They're starting to become more mature as men and as footballers, and understand what's needed a little bit more from week to week. So we'll get another test of that this week. But I can sense in them they're really growing up in terms of their understanding of what's required to win week after week in AFL footy.
Williams' form has obviously had a tumultuous year personally for so many reasons, but he was phenomenal again today.
The birth of his son has seemed to have catapulted his form, 35 and 40, 2 weeks in a row. So obviously there's something good happening in the Beans household. And, he was terrific today, as he was last week, and set a great example to his teammates, and no doubt had a big influence in why we won the game today.
That is your AFL wrap. So don't accuse us of not bringing you all the biggest stories from the world of sport. Talking of the world of sport, Tour de France is underway. They're up and running. 60 kilometres to go. There's been a brief surge in the peloton, bringing the gap to the leading trio down under 2 minutes. 60 k's to go, as I mentioned. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Mark Cavendish is well posted and well placed to take on the other sprinters towards the end of this one. Let's go stateside and get a quick wrap up of what's going on down there at the moment, because LeBron's been in the headlines yet again this week. What's the latest decision that he's made?
Well, he's decided to go to Hollywood, Tom. He's decided to take his free agency option. He's leaving Cleveland Cavaliers, and he's a new Laker. He's gone to try and win more titles.
Good move.
at the LA Lakers. Interesting move. He's 33 years old. He's incredibly fit, but the Lakers need to find some pieces to go around him, because you can't be a one-man team in basketball. Lakers have been terrible for several years now. They've got some young talent, but they need to go into back into free agency and pick up some more players, or one other big-name player to find him. There's not a lot of guys available at the moment that can go with LeBron, so it's going to be interesting to see how they put some pieces together for LeBron. But big move for him. He's 33 years old, incredibly fit, but he doesn't have that long left, and he needs to win rings now. That's what he wants, immediate success. So the Magic Johnson, who's the GM there at the with the Lakers, is going to have to find another player or two of high stature, of all-star caliber, to supplement the talent that is LeBron James.
Arch, hate to say I told you that, but I think, though, with LeBron making that decision, look, there's a couple of places that he could have gone. He could have gone to the Houston Rockets. LA, of course, was on the cards. Philadelphia was on the cards. But you have got to think that he has been promised certain players before he signed that deal. Yes, financially it makes sense. I think he'd be paid like $36.8 million per season at the LA Lakers. But you surely got to ask yourself a question. They must have promised him certain players before he decided to make the move to Hollywood.
The one big problem, yeah, they would have done that. They would have talked about who else they're going to supplement LeBron with. But the problem he's got now is he's gone from what's been usually known as the weaker conference to the Eastern Conference, where wherever LeBron's gone in the Eastern Conference, whether it be Miami or Cleveland, he's won that and he's got the NBA Finals. He's gone to the Western Conference. To get to an NBA Finals in the Western Conference, you need to get past Houston Rockets, best team in regular season last year, Chris Paul, James Harden. You need to get past Golden State Warriors before you even get to a finals. They've supplemented their team this week. They've added a fifth all-star with DeMarcus Cousins going there to supplement their big four. So you've got to get past Houston. You've got to get past Golden State. You've also got the likes of San Antonio Spurs. You've got Oklahoma City Thunder. You've got the Utah Jazz. He's got a lot of work cut out with a team that's mid-league at best to get them and win the Western Conference. And that's the problem. He needs to win now. He can't be part of a rebuilding project. He doesn't have 3 or 4 years to base himself and trying to build a team. He needs instant success. So there are some players. It will be interesting to see what happens now in free agency. Two big names who will go somewhere is Kawhi Leonard. He said he wants to leave Spurs, but he needs to be traded. So to get a trade, you're going to have to give up pieces. You're going to have to give up two players and draft picks and cap space to get him. Carmelo Anthony's just been waived from the Oklahoma City Thunder. He may end up as a Laker. Does that work, though? He's an older player as well. So the problem for LeBron, the problem for Magic Johnson, the big issue for the LA Lakers is who they're going to get, because they need to move quickly, because all the big free agents have basically stuck to where they're staying.
But Arch, you've got to think to yourself that the thinking behind this team would be a more older, experienced team, a team that's good for 1 year or 2 years that can bring quick success to the Lakers. I don't think the players that they were bringing in will be 21, 22, 23-year-olds.
No, but that's where if you want to get value for money, because you also have salary caps, and the younger players in the NBA, the younger players in the NBA have not on as big a contracts, because it takes a while before you can earn those big, mega $160 million deals like LeBron James. He's been in the league 13 years, so he gets the maximum deal. But that's the dilemma they face. It's a very sort of the American sports system, the way it works, is if you want to take one of my big players, unless he's a free agent, you have to pay. And you usually pay with young players and talent and draft picks. So that's the dilemma again for LeBron and the Lakers. They will have to find another big-name player somewhere to complement his skills and to make LA a contender in the Western Conference.
Do send us your thoughts on that one. Text them to us now on 4001. And quick final mention before we go for a quick break to the Philippine and the Australian basketball teams playing in the FIBA World Cup qualifier over in Manila a little earlier on this week. Benji, I'm sure, was watching on with interest on that one. I think the Philippines were left with one player on the court at the end.
They should call it the Rumble in the Jungle.
Oh, unbelievable scenes. And this was a World Cup qualifying match. And what happened is there was obviously a bit of niggle between the teams, Tom. There was plenty of verbals, and then there was a couple of hard fouls in the match. And a couple of the players, I think the Philippine players, took exception to some of the verbal digs by the Australians, and they said, "Well, bugger this, we're going to get full on there." And basically we had a situation where the crowd got involved, the fans were chasing players, the players were throwing kung fu kicks at different players were being held down.
It's
and hit. It was unbelievable. The result.
You had four players ejected by the
you know, four Australians ejected. I think you had nine Philippine players ejected. They were left with.
There were three on the court at the end.
And yeah, but then two fouled out.
And then they fouled out. So then one fella left.
One Filipino player left, taking on five Australians. So at that stage, the ref actually called the match, and Australia won. They were 30 or 40 points up at the time in the third quarter, anyway. But bizarre scenes. There will be some serious ramifications on this, not less for Filipino basketball, but also for the Australian players. They had an NBA player,
Thon Maker,
was running around throwing kung fu kicks at players. it was a dilemma. But here we are with
the
our American.
The voice you just heard there was Ross Christie. He is our US sport aficionado, specialist, and correspondent. He's joined us, Dan. He's come down for the football. He loves his football. I mean, have you ever seen scenes like that?
Unbelievable. It was a scene out of Rocky or something like that. Could you? And the game was already decided. So I just don't quite understand why they decided to start throwing haymakers like they're in the WWE. But as you said, Thon Maker was on it. The Philippines actually have an old NBA player. His name's it's jogging my memory right now.
From Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, Brooklyn Nets center. So there's
Andre Blanche.
Yeah, Blanche. And there's some NBA talent out there, but they came on in through the elbow, and after the elbow, it just spilled into the stands there. Kind of remind me back in Detroit, the Malice in the Palace. You remember that with Rasheed Wallace getting into the stands and everyone going up into Ron Artest getting it up in there. So, yeah, that was certainly outstanding.
We were just talking, Ross, before you came on air about the big move, really, in American sport, the big basketball free agency move. LeBron is going to Hollywood. Lakers are going to try and rebuild their franchise around him. The question we're just asking ourselves, he's got to do it tough now. Wherever he was in the East, they made the finals. He's now gone to a stacked Western Conference. He's got to get past Houston. He's got to get past Golden State. He's going to get past San Antonio. He's going to get past Oklahoma and Utah. What is Magic Johnson going to do? He needs another, at least one big asset to go with him to make them a contender. Where are they going to find another big-name player? There are some guys out there, but it's not as easy as saying it as getting them done.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's really hard right now because a lot of big guys have already signed for some of the big teams out there. He comes in, he signs a four-year contract, so you know you're getting a four-year commitment. When he was coming into Cleveland, he was just doing a one-year contract with a player option, so you really never knew every single year these past 4 years if LeBron was coming back. Now the Lakers know that they have him for four solid years. One of the big pieces will be San Antonio Spurs power forward Kawhi Leonard. He's known to be disgruntled out there in Texas. He wants to come home to Los Angeles. This is a guy that came in third place in MVP voting, so he's a really, really big key piece if the Lakers were to get him. They went out and got a solid point guard in Rajon Rondo. This is a guy that has championship experience with the Boston Celtics, but still, they're still missing someone. They need someone, some big move, and I think Magic Johnson has a trade up his sleeve. I think he's going to get one more move done to give LeBron a running mate, because if you look at that roster right now, that Los Angeles Lakers roster, what of it is, it's not sexy. There's nothing good about it. There's nothing that stands out. They got Ball at the point guard position as well with Rondo, but Kuzma, he's decent. Every single person on that roster is below 25 years old besides LeBron James.
What's been interesting, though, is he's gone out and recruited a couple of LeBron's big enemies. Lance Stephenson, who had running battles with Indiana for years, the man that used to blow in his ear and used to mix it up with LeBron, he's gone there. And LeBron also had issues with Rajon Rondo over his career as well. He's, you know, and they've said, well, we can't beat him, we might as well join him, that philosophy. Those two veterans will be good for the Lakers and good for LeBron. But as you say, they need a Kawhi Leonard, they need a DeMar DeRozan, they need a serious all-star caliber player to make a difference there.
Yeah, exactly right.
What about Carmelo, though? Could he be an interesting addition?
That is an interesting addition, because Oklahoma City is known to be in a buyout with Carmelo Anthony, who's in the last year of his contract. He would be being paid over $30 million, so it's going to be a very, very hard buyout right now. But if he becomes available, you're going to see him try to go with one of these championship contenders. I see him going to Houston with Chris Paul, either coming to Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James, or maybe Miami has a very close relationship with Dwayne Wade. If Dwayne Wade decides to come back, South Beach, very, very friendly place. Florida, of course, is a tax-free state as well, so he can make a little bit more money out there. But at this stage in his career, Carmelo Anthony's made as much money as anyone else in the NBA. This guy wants a ring, so he's going to go to a contender, the best contender right now. Warriors are stacked. They're not going to take him on. You're looking at Houston or LA, I think.
UFC 226, whilst we've got you here, Roscoe, because there was news this week that Max Holloway, who was the sort of poster boy, the pin-up for that particular fight, he had to pull because of concussion, so we're told. Which means, does that mean that the focus will now fall on the Cormier-Miocic fight?
Yeah, it's going to come down to Cormier. Cormier is trying to cement his legacy coming down to this one. He's had all the big fights in his career. He's going back to, I believe the last time he fought was with John Bones Jones, and John Bones Jones had to win the fight, but then he got called out because of the PEDs the third time in his career. So everything's going to come down. All eyes are going to be on Cormier in this one. He's going to cement his legacy. There is some talk that Cormier might retire from the octagon after this bout. So this could be his last time in the ring. Certainly one of the legends in UFC. He's done has a phenomenal career, and he's one of these guys that's always kind of done it the right way. So he's, it'll be exciting to see him fight.
It's exciting to see you down here as well. Have you done the Superdome yet down here during the World Cup?
You know, I have been in this Superdome. If you
haven't, good? Yeah, I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it's a good. It's a good rowdy time. If you are sitting at home right now and you have not made it down to the Bud X Superdome, get up right now. You have an hour and a half. You can drive here, park for free at DeBrasti, get into that dome, and watch this English-Swedish game because it is nothing short of phenomenal.
Is it really?
Phil and the boys have done a phenomenal job. Every single time a goal goes in, we have the big goal coming across the screen. We have the yellow and red card signs coming up. And then when halftime hits and the game hits, songs galore. It's just an incredible, incredible environment. It's one of the best environments. I remember being here 4 years ago when the States were in it.
Yeah.
And still, I have no dog in the fight, and I'm still not missing any of these games, guys. So hats off to Brasti, and if you guys are at home, come on down to Bud X Superdome. It is simply phenomenal.
It's good to have you down here. Nice to see you as well. Got to get a prediction for you in case I lose you to the dome a little later on. England, Sweden, you've been watching both of these teams throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I've been following both these teams throughout the tournament. I like what Sweden's doing. They've been playing more as a team. It seems they play a lot better without Zlatan. Than, you know, it just seems like they're more cohesive. But I really like England. I mean, everyone's a little skeptical. All my English friends are skeptical, but
it's just our nature, Ross. It just comes naturally to us.
King's just been banging in goals. I like what they've been doing. Vardy's coming with a little bit of a niggle, so you know, you're really relying on Kane in this game. But I think England's going to get this one 2-0.
Roscoe, we're going to catch up with you a little later on. Ross Christ is down here enjoying the football. We've got a number of our correspondents, a number of the Dubai iSport team making their way down here. Robbie Greenfield will be joining us, maybe after hitting a 65 a little later on or early on today.
Was Robbie playing nine holes today?
Just the nine holes, was it? Which leads us nicely into the world of golf. Where are they playing? They're obviously playing over an island, aren't they?
Yeah, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Robbie's over there 2 days ago playing in the Pro-Am. So he's jitted and he's obviously having a round of golf actually at the Elves Club at the moment. He's going to be down here shortly giving us an update on everything golfing. But let's just leave Ireland, go to North America, because it's an interesting name tournament here, Tom. It's a military tribute at the Greenbrier. And that's the name of the event. Most of the big-name players are sort of gearing up for that third major of the year, the Open Championship at Carnoustie, but there are some notable players taking place. Let me give you a round two leaderboard from the PGA Tour. Kelly Kraft from the US is leading at 13 under par rounds of 64 and 63 for the American. One shot further back, one man that has played in Dubai, Anirban Lahiri, the Indian, rounds of 67 and a wonderful round of 61 yesterday, almost threatening that magical 59, breaking 60 for the Indian player Anirban Lahiri. Webb Simpson, he's tied with at 12 under par. One shot further back is Jason Kolrak at 11 under par. But let's just have a quick listen to Anirban Lahiri talking about that second round, 61. What an amazing round of golf that was.
Anirban, 9 birdies. You haven't made a bogey yet. You birdie 8 and 9. Big smile coming off of that ninth green. What a day for you.
Yeah, it was nice. You know, it was a perfect day to go out there and play. The greens were pure. I think we played in the afternoon yesterday and they were starting to get a little bumpy. Obviously the rain and just being out early, it was good to take advantage of the conditions.
We had a chance to talk at the Travelers Championship and you said your game was turning around. Yeah. Tied for ninth there, top 15 finished last week as well, and then you come here and shoot 61 in the second round. Yeah. Things are looking up for you.
No, I've been feeling good. You know, I've been feeling good over the last 2 weeks. I've seen the improvement on the golf course. You know, I've tried to plug the gaps that I've found over the last 2 weeks. And you know, I'm happy that more than anything else, I haven't dropped a shot. But, you know, I'm not thinking about that. The focus is just to put myself in the best position that I can. And that's a big positive for me.
Based on the changeable conditions, we may get some moisture again later on today. How's the prospects for the weekend now and the position you are near at the top of the leaderboard?
Well, it depends. You know, I don't know if I'll be leading at the end of the day, right, because the golf course isn't really going to change through the course of the day. It's going to stay soft, and it's, you know, you can make a bunch of birdies, but I'm just happy with the way I'm playing. You know, I need to keep finding as many fairways as I can, because if you do, you can really be aggressive with the greens being soft. So, yeah, you know, if I keep myself in play, I like the way the golf course sets up, yeah, I should be good.
Beyond golf, your first trip to the Greenbrier, what's it been like?
It's been fantastic. You know, it's a really neat place. It's unique. Obviously, you know, when you get here, you talk to the other players and you kind of get a sense. And there's people on both sides of the fence, but it's such a nice, you know, such a nice getaway. They've got so much to do here. Great resort. And personally, I love the golf course. You know, I like old school tracks, and this is as old school as it gets.
Right.
So that's what the thoughts of Anibaran Lahiri giving his thoughts there. Let's have a look at that leaderboard at the moment, though, because, Carlos, there's a South African on top of the leaderboard over there.
You know, the South African is on top of the leaderboard in Ireland, Tom.
Oh, that's Ireland, is
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, I'm getting wrong. Sorry.
No, sure. Eric Van Rooyen, of course, he's tied at the top of the leaderboard. We're just leading now with one shot over Ryan Fox, which, of course, is the son of former All Black great Grant Fox. To me, ultimately one of the best fly halves in world rugby. But, yeah, Eric Van Rooyen, very interesting career, Tom. Graduated from the University of Minnesota. He was there on a scholarship. He's been playing on the Sunshine Tour as well as the European Tour. And I think the 28-year-old has just been struggling for a bit of consistency. But this could be his big break that he's looking for. He's had two professional wins. Of course, he's won the Eye of Africa tournament down in South Africa. And then he also came third earlier this year in the Joburg Open. So he's been there and thereabout, but he's really, really showing what he's worth at the moment. And as you say, he goes into round three tied for the lead. He's now one under for his third round, and as you say, if he can kind of keep the consistency going, winning this one, it will be the big victory that he needs to kind of keep his card in the European Tour.
Yeah, that's Eric Van Rooyen, a young South African who is leading currently at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. This is what he had to say after his second round, 65.
Eric, that's a fantastic round of 65 from you today, and I think that iron shot into 18 there probably summed up the way you've played this golf course. Not too many birdies around, but you gave yourself a great chance with some great iron play today.
Exactly. 18 was sort of just a cherry on the cake today. I hit it beautifully, tee to green all day, and obviously holding a few nice putts, one long one on my back nine as well. So, yeah, playing very nicely.
How aggressive have you been out there? We've had guys saying they're taking drivers because they know some of the rough is playable. What's your approach been over the first 2 days?
You can do that. I think for me it's sort of been a bit of a mix in between the two. There's some holes where I really just want to be in the fairway and even lay up short of some of the bunkers to just give myself play out of the fairway, even if it's longer on end. So it just depends on the hole, I guess.
And it always helps when you get off to a great start as well. It was a fantastic front nine from you in just 30 shots.
It was. Really enjoyed it. You know, straight out the blocks, birdie on one. Hold a nice bunker shot for birdie on six, which was great. I hit a poor iron shot off the tee and then, you know, walked off with birdie, so I was really happy. And just kept things going. Set calm in the back nine. And obviously finished with two birdies, 17 and 18, so I'm happy man.
Joint leader going into the weekend. How excited are you now about the prospect of going in at the top of the leaderboard in a Rolex Series event?
It's exciting. And it's exciting being here as well. You know, I love Lynx golf, even though I haven't played much. I've only played the Dunhill Lynx and now this tournament, so I'm fairly new to it, but I absolutely love it. So it's going to be a great weekend.
That's the current leader of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, Eric Van Rooyen. He's currently two under after two holes today, which takes his total score to 10 under par, which gives him a two-shot lead from Matteo Pavon and Ryan Fox. A notable other scores today, we've seen Andy Sullivan card a 65, a round of 7 under par. He's back in a tie for fifth at 6 under par. John Ram, the world number 5, has also put in a great round, 5 under par through 17 holes today. He's also in a tie for fifth. Looking further down the field, and of course, it's only due that we talk about the host of this tournament, Rory McIlroy. It's hosted by the Rory McIlroy Foundation. He struggled a bit with the flat stick to date. He's had rounds of 70, 73 yesterday. He's 1 under par today after 13 holes. So he's there or thereabouts. He's hitting the ball okay, but he just can't get the putts to drop for Rory McIlroy at the moment. This is what he had to say after his round of 73 yesterday to the European Tour audience.
How much you can really have to dig deep with that attitude right now after, I'm sure, simmering with that finish a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, just two poor tee shots on the last two holes, and just put myself out of position. It was hard to make par from there. Felt like I hit the ball okay again today. I mean, it's definitely going in the right direction. Didn't hole anything really again. Held a nice one for birdie on six, but that was really it. I finished out okay, like inside sort of 4 or 5 feet, I was all right. But yeah, I'm just going to have to hit it a bit closer and hole a few over the weekend if I want to have a chance.
Was the finish kind of a build-up of that frustration that you hadn't quite held enough?
Not particularly. It was two bad swings off the tee. The one on eight wasn't that bad a swing. It just went through the fairway a bit more than I thought, and then I was sort of in two minds on the ninth tee about what to hit off the tee. It was either a 2-iron or a 3-wood, and I was trying to hit the 2-iron a bit hard and got ahead of it. So, yeah, just two poor swings and two bogeys. But, you know, it's not as if the guys are getting away out there. It's getting firm. It's tough to get it close to these hole locations, even with short irons in your hand. So, you know, I'm 6 behind at the minute, and you know, hopefully I'm not too far. Not too many shots more than that behind going into the weekend.
Looking like that, I mean, a few players have touched about the kind of these subtle nuances on the greens. Do you feel that? Are they just quite tricky to read sometimes?
Yeah, they are. It seems like a lot of putts sort of do, you know, at least two things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going right to left for the first half and left to right, and you know, if you get it a bit too firm through the first half and it doesn't take that right to left, then you know, they're tricky. And I think if you just see a few drop, you can get some confidence and be a bit more confident in your reads. But you know, I'll keep plugging away and just keep giving myself opportunities, and hopefully some will fall on the weekend.
I've just got to ask you about these crowds. They are unbelievable, but the motivation they will give you now is they will you to move up that leaderboard over the weekend.
Yeah,
tick-tock goes the big clock as we build up for the World Cup quarterfinals. England against Sweden kicks us off at 6 o'clock, and already this place is rocking. We're broadcasting live from Barassi, an absolute privilege to be down here today with literally thousands of football fans turning out in their droves to get behind their teams. We are, though, conscious of the fact that we are a multi-sport show, and there is plenty of sport going on around the world. Now, more so, the British Grand Prix. The British Grand Prix will be raced tomorrow at Silverstone. As it stands, it will be the penultimate Grand Prix to be held at Silverstone. Last race scheduled for next year, unless the two negotiating teams can come to a conclusion over the problems that they are facing at the moment. So, Silverstone needs to serve up another classic at the moment. And if practice is anything to go by, it might well do.
It only takes a split second to go from hero to zero in Formula One, and Austria winner Max Verstappen did just that as he crashed out of free practice 2 in Great Britain.
You okay, Max?
No, mate. The rear is damaged.
Charles Leclerc recovered from his spin at Brooklands to engage in some elbows-out action with Fernando Alonso. The pair briefly battled around the circuit that hosted the first ever Formula One Grand Prix in 1950. Severe problems for Pierre Gasly, whose Toro Rosso gave up the ghost halfway through the session.
Your problem. Should I stop?
Okay, stop. Switch off.
And there were off-track excursions for Sebastian Vettel and Lance Stroll in the Williams, who was also released from his pit garage straight into the path of a perplexed Kimi Raikkonen.
Hey, come on.
Raikkonen was struggling for grip on his high fuel runs, but Ferrari seemed to have no problem to unlock their pure pace. Vettel topping the time charts on a Friday for the first time in 2018, ahead of the two Mercedes of Hamilton and Bottas. With the top two separated by just a single point in the title race, and Britain going through a spell of sustained sunshine, the heat really is on for the world's finest drivers as they battle for victory at the British Grand Prix.
And that was practice. We are getting ready for qualifying. Mark Archer's been following this one for us this afternoon. Hamilton's been going well in practices thus far, but qualifying gets underway in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, it does indeed. Lewis Hamilton was the fastest in the final practice this morning. Sebastian Vettel was the fastest in practice 2 at the end of yesterday. So we don't know really who's got the speed yet, but we do know Mercedes have an amazing track record, particularly Lewis Hamilton. He's won 5 previous British Grand Prix championships and he's looking for a 6th. I can give you a quick rundown of the Drivers' Championship. It's nip and tuck there at the top of the Drivers' Championship. Sebastian Vettel on 146 points is 1 point ahead of Lewis Hamilton back on 145. In third place Kimi Raikkonen, back to Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen won his fourth Grand Prix last weekend at the Austrian Grand Prix. Great race for him, but it was a terrible weekend for Mercedes with Bottas and Lewis Hamilton both having mechanical failures there. So it's all to play for. Qualifying so important. We know that when Mercedes get the front of the grid, they're extremely tough to beat. Can the Ferrari of Vettel or Kimi Raikkonen upset that and get out front and pole and put some pressure on Mercedes? Let's wait and see.
It's going to be a fascinating race. I'm just interested as well, because you look at Lewis Hamilton's demeanour in the last couple of races. He's been very vocal about criticising other races, calling them boring and the dullest he's ever run in, etc. I wonder whether he's doing his little bit for trying to flag, wave the Union Jack to try and get a little more focus on what could be an exciting race at Silverstone this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Lewis is the crowd favourite. We've been seeing all the things he's been doing off the track. Last night he was serving the marshals snacks and little drinks and things like that. So he is really, really loved. And I think it's a very exciting Formula One season, because for once, to me, it's two teams competing against each other, two drivers competing against each other. And it's not just Mercedes, 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 Mercedes. So Vettel's really come to the party. I think the Ferraris have done well. But to me, that Silverstone circuit, Lewis Hamilton knows it so well. He's been fastest in practice. I honestly think he'll get pole for the Grand Prix tomorrow, and he's going to be very difficult to beat on his home circuit.
Let's get some inside track on this one, if we can. Excuse the pun, from Kimi Raikkonen of Ferrari, one of the great orators, one of the great speakers in the world of sport. Kimi has been giving us his take on how you win at Silverstone.
A classic Grand Prix, but the track has been changed dramatically in 2011. Cops. It used to be turn one, such a fast turn that you always think, next time I will try to do it flat out. Package. One of the nicest sections in the world. Four very fast corners, changing direction after each one of them. Stall. Very important corner, since it is a very clear overtaking point in a difficult track to overtake. You may try to pass from the inside or outside.
To give Ferrari half a chance, Mark Archer?
No, you do. You know, Sebastian Vettel is as good a driver on his day as Lewis Hamilton, so can he put some pressure on him? And let's not rule out the Red Bulls. If you look at who's won Grand Prix this year, there's been nine Grand Prix to date. Lewis Hamilton's won three, Sebastian Vettel's won three, and then Red Bull between the two drivers, Daniel Ricciardo's won two, and Max Verstappen with one. So it's 3-3-3 if you talk about Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. So they're not far away, the Red Bulls of Verstappen and Ricciardo as well, from being in there. But you think Lewis Hamilton, five times champion at Silverstone, it's his, isn't it? It's he's got to be in the mix. And if he gets a good qualifying in, because he constantly wants to rush off and watch England play football at 6 o'clock, then let's wait and see. But the man that can upset the apple cart is of course the German Sebastian Vettel.
So what do you need to do to win at the British Grand Prix? Let's turn to our friends in the pit lane, who will tell us and run the line on what you need to do at Silverstone.
Hello everybody, welcome to Silverstone. It's the big one, it's British Grand Prix weekend. If you're an England fan, all is going pretty well, fingers crossed, in the World Cup, and it's 30 degrees in the shade. It's times like this, it's lovely to be in the British countryside.
It is. Silverstone looks amazing. Looking forward to the Grand Prix. And all of our friends in the paddock who come from overseas, shall we say, always rib us and say, why do you live in England? It's so cold, it's so miserable. Well, they can't say that anymore, especially this year. So the race should be good. Mercedes were so strong here last year. They need a recovery weekend after the craziness of Austria last weekend. So will Ferrari be able to push them again? We've seen Mercedes looking a little bit fragile here and there as well for the first time for a while. And Red Bull are flying too.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, Lewis, we know, is going for a record sixth Grand Prix victory here. The crowd get behind him here. He's probably going to need it more than ever after everything that happened last time out in Austria.
Yes, a double did not finish for the Mercedes team, and Lewis was already on his back foot a little bit. The strategy was wrong, so fourth looked like it was going to be the best result he could get anyway. Then the car broke down. Bottas, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all this year. He just cannot get it to run for him. So Mercedes need a strong weekend, as you say, and Lewis, somehow, he just excels here, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you who does need a good weekend here. That's McLaren. They've made the change. Boulier's gone, but a great British team in front of the fans. And there's so much support. We know that every time for McLaren. Probably the most popular team, along with Williams, up and down the pit lane here when we come to Silverstone. What's got to go right there for them, and do you think the fixes are going to be quick?
It's never quick in Formula One. When the momentum slows, the flywheel slows down, it's hard to get it going again. We've got Jenson Button with us this weekend, former McLaren driver. I'm a former McLaren driver, and we together, hopefully we can pool some ideas as to why we think it's gone wrong and how long it will take to put it right, and indeed, can they put it right?
Lots on the agenda. We cannot wait for this one.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.